welcome to The Dividing Line. My name is James White, and it has been a very, very interesting few days for me, anyways. On Saturday morning, I posted a tweet on Twitter that has gotten a lot of attention, let's just say, over the past few days, and I want to need to talk about that today on the program. It has been educational, but not always enjoyable by any stretch of the imagination. I want to start off with a video, actually, and I did unplug and replug, so hopefully we're okay over there. What? So you don't have it. We really should practice these things before getting started. And now I have nothing. And you have nothing. That's not good. So we may just have to listen to it if we can't play any. Well, I've got a lot of stuff that I need to show today. This is, should have practiced this beforehand. Sorry, folks. Well, this will be the fourth time. So if it's not going to work now, it's not going to work. And I don't think you're going to. I don't think you're able to reset over there. So we're sort of, well, I'll just have to read stuff for you. I won't be able to show you. Oh, that's, I even made a presentation. Well, this is not starting off well, by any stretch of the imagination, but we will just have to do what we have to do. So I will just do my best to, read for you and play for you and do stuff like that, and we'll just figure it out from there. So I want to play for you, and you can just look at me watching it play. What I think is a very important video from Prager University, and it addresses a lot of the issues that are important in analyzing what we're facing today in our culture and in the church as a whole. And so let me just go ahead and play this. And like I said, I wish you could see it, but we can't do that today. So here is the audio.
What are the five biggest issues facing blacks in America? Here's my list. Problem number five, the victim mentality. Nothing holds someone back more than seeing himself as a victim. Why? Because a victim is not responsible for his situation. Everything is someone else's fault. And the victim sees little chance of improving his life. How can he get ahead if someone is holding him back? All this makes the victim unhappy, frustrated, and angry. This is how too many blacks see themselves, as victims. So much so that their victim status becomes their primary identity and their ruling ideology. I call it victimology. Unfortunately, many black churches preach this victimology. Many black parents pass it on to their children. Inner city schools teach it to their students, and the black media reinforce it. Meanwhile, the NAACP and other black grievance groups fundraise on it. Problem number four, lack of diversity. Blacks repeatedly demand an honest dialogue or debate about race. But how can there ever be an honest dialogue about race between blacks and whites when there is virtually no honest dialogue between blacks and blacks? It's hypocritical. And if a black doesn't think whites are ultimately responsible for black people's problems, they're labeled a sellout, Uncle Tom, or race traitor. As long as this type of groupthink exists, race reverence of the Al Sharpton, Jesse Jackson type will continue to be celebrated, while independent black thinkers such as Professors Thomas Sowell and Walter Williams will be shunned. The honest race dialogue and debate that first has to happen is not between blacks and whites, but between blacks and blacks. We demand diversity from others, but need to practice it ourselves where it really matters, in thought, opinion, and even political affiliation. Problem number three, urban terrorism. As just about everyone knows, but too few talk about publicly, in majority black cities, violent black-on-black crime is rampant. A Department of Justice study from 1980 through 2008 revealed that blacks accounted for almost half of the nation's homicide victims, 47.4%, and more than half of the offenders, 52.4%, all while being 13% of America's population. The Tuskegee Institute conducted a study of all known lynchings of blacks that occurred between 1882 through 1968. During this 86-year span, which is essentially the post-Civil War era up to the Civil Rights era, 3,446 blacks were reportedly lynched. Presently, black-on-black murder eclipses the number of blacks lynched over the course of 80 years, roughly every 6 months. Unbelievably, the culpability for this disproportionate amount of mayhem actually lies with a menacing 2-3% minority within the black populace. I call them urban terrorists. And since they are literally spawned from problem number two, the black community protects them. Problem number two, proliferation of baby mamas. The disintegration of the nuclear family has led to an astronomical increase of single mother households. According to the Moynihan Report, in 1965, nearly 25% of black children were born to unwed mothers. The report's author, Daniel Patrick Moynihan, said this was a disaster in the making. He was, of course, vilified by so-called black leaders and their progressive allies. But he was right. Today, the out-of-wedlock birth rate is nearly 75% and even higher in some urban areas. To be clear, baby daddies share this responsibility with baby mamas. Yet, while baby daddies are blamed and rarely shown compassion, baby mamas are rarely blamed and receive both compassion and support. This lopsided dynamic and the previously listed pathologies stem directly from the number one problem facing the black community. Problem number one, unquestioning allegiance to so-called progressive policies. Unwavering loyalty to progressive liberal policies is the primary reason these dire conditions persist. It both makes them possible and perpetuates them. It's no coincidence that progressivism is the common thread that binds predominantly black cities where single-parent homes, failing schools, rampant poverty, and crime predominate. Look at cities like Detroit, Philadelphia, and Baltimore. They've been run by progressive Democrats for decades. If their liberal policies were at all effective, these cities should have become models of economic growth and prosperity. Instead, they're models of dysfunction. By fostering and exploiting the victim mentality, discouraging self-examination, subsidizing baby mamas, and making excuses for black thugs, so-called progressive policies don't alleviate the problems that afflict the black community. They aggravate those problems. You may have noticed that racism did not make the list. Why not? It's simple. There will be no solution to the problems afflicting black America until more blacks recognize that the issues plaguing our community are ultimately self-inflicted. Does racism exist? Sure. But there are other problems far more serious. And waiting until there are no more races will mean waiting and making excuses forever. I'm Talib Starks for Prager University.
Now, if you simply move forward from where he stopped, because that was not a theological analysis, by common grace, puts its finger on all sorts of important things. It puts its finger on the groupthink, the fact that studies have shown that over the past number of years, 92 to 98% voting record unanimity. You have the group where you're not allowed to think differently. And we've watched it. He gave some terms that are used for black people who dare to stand up and say, hey, these are the things we need to be looking at, and do not follow the narrative that has been fed into the community by the leftists, by the progressivists. And we know the other terms. Just a few months ago was Dr. Anthony Bradley of King's College referred to black men who would not repeat and parrot the narrative as Oreos. Dr. Eric Mason at, was that the Martin Luther King 50 or the T4G? I forget which one. They're so close together. Talked about people who are black on the outside, white on the inside. There are other terms that are used regularly. Just yesterday, I saw a scholar attacking Samuel Say, saying that he's self-loathing, that he hates his people for daring to say what he said in his article, which, again, was just simply an honest identification of the problems. And so when you have this narrative where basically your faithfulness to your community is determined by how faithfully you repeat what you are being told to repeat. You can only go, you can't answer finally what drives that without some kind of a theological answer. Over the past couple of days, about five or six people that I've seen, I've blocked so many people and muted so many people that I'm sure there are more. But a number of people have attempted to accuse me of inconsistency. Well, I've been accused of a lot of things. We'll get to some of those. But on the one hand, in the many responses that I wrote, and I did not back down this weekend. I did not leave Twitter. Eventually, I got to the point where after saying the same thing the third or fourth time, I demurred from repeating it yet again and again and again. But I did not back down because this is not an issue upon which you can back down without compromising core principles, not only principles of freedom and liberty and exercising those things, but within the Christian community of just simply standing on principle of what the gospel means and what sin is. And, of course, demanding that your fellow believers don't think with the mind of the world, but think with the mind of Christ. There's that issue that we'll get to later on. But the point is that something like this particular presentation can only go so far. There is a theological aspect that Christians should recognize is primary to anything else. And I was accused by various people of being inconsistent because on the theological realm, I said, look, there's only one race. There's the human race. And we shouldn't give in to the kind of divisive thinking that allows for the discussion of black spaces and white spaces and Chinese spaces and Hispanic spaces and all the rest of this spaces stuff. It's really getting spacey. It's just we didn't even use these terms just a few years ago, and now it's all over the place. Anyway, but then at the other on the other hand, I've already used the term black community. Well, you're being inconsistent. Throughout this weekend, I have been reminded of the necessity over and over again of thinking in clear, logical categories. Having the theological commitment that there is only one race has nothing to do with the fact that, for example, the statistics we just listened to in that audio presentation, those statistics were derived from governmental sources or non-governmental sources based upon the analysis of ethnic groups. I can't change how statistics are gathered. I have to utilize them. And in this situation, culturally in the United States and in Western cultures as a whole, we have to deal with the reality that there is a black community. It is not absolutely unified, but when it votes 92 to 98% the same way, there is a black community. There is a expected behavior, an expected worldview. And when you go against that, when you go against the narrative, that's when you get called a race traitor, or an Oreo, or whatever else it might be. As I said this weekend, there is no corresponding white community. I've been called a racist falsely by many people by redefining the term racism, but no one has come up with what's the reverse of vanilla Oreo. There just isn't anything there. There is no expectation that I, as a white person, am going to buy one particular narrative. There's all sorts of narratives that are presented that nothing, would in no way, shape, or form press upon me to go a particular perspective. But there is in the black community. There is in the black community. All you have to do is look how is Clarence Thomas treated? How is Thomas Sowell treated? What kind of language is used of individuals like that? Or even in the Christian community. We saw Vody Balcom thrown under a bus at the T4G meeting last year. Thrown under the bus. And why? Because he dared to bring a biblical perspective to the question of what had happened in Ferguson. So one of the big issues here is one of the things I think we have seen. I have for a long time said that our primary commitment as Christians is to our identity in Jesus Christ, our identity as redeemed sinners. And that identity utterly overrides any other relationship in this world. That this is absolutely vital. We must see this. And so when you listen to what has been happening, what we've seen is that there are many people who call themselves Christians who absolutely insist that their membership in the black community overrides and is definitional of their membership in the Christian community. So there have been a number of black brothers and sisters who have simply dismissed me as a Christian for daring to write a single tweet that is factual and logical. No one over the past 3.5 days has even come close to disputing anything that I said. Nothing. And I've engaged people. I've engaged people and tried to get them to reason. You can read it. The record is out there until it gets deleted by Twitter, I would assume. It's out there. And yet, for many people, my even daring to address the issue was sufficient to overthrow the gospel of Jesus Christ. So, what's the ultimate commitment for those individuals? Where is their ultimate identity? It is in the ethnic group, not in the church, not in Christ. It's in that ethnic group. And that's an extremely troubling issue. That's an extremely troubling reality that has been illustrated over and over and over again. Now, so I had seen that particular video. And then, as you may know, just last week, I directed everybody to an excellent, excellent, excellent article. I praised it highly. Because it had to have been very, very difficult to write. It's very well written, and it was Samuel Say's article, "Our Fathers, Our Failures." And when you read this particular article, you are faced with certain realities. This article was still fresh on my mind when on Saturday morning, I was just doing some reading and I ran across a particular statistic. It prompted a recollection of what Samuel had said, and that's what led to the tweet. So let me remind you of some of the things that Samuel said, because I think it's important. Samuel, in talking about his own experience of fatherlessness, and not having ever known his father, and having only seen a picture of his father when his father was the same age he was, started talking about his own experience. It was a tough article to read and must have been much harder to write. He writes, children raised in single-parent households are 20 times more likely to develop behavioral problems, 9 times more likely to not graduate from high school, and 2 times more likely to engage in early sexual activity than children raised in two-parent households. Children raised in single mother households generally receive less attention and discipline than children raised in two-parent households. That inevitably creates behavioral, educational, and economic disparities between people raised in two-parent households and people raised in single-parent households. And this explains the disparities between Black Americans and white Americans, Black Canadians and white Canadians. That's what was so insightful and useful about Samuel's article, is that he's not an American. He lives in Canada. And Canada does not have our history. And he goes through some of that discussion in the article. I won't have time to read that. America and Canada do not share the same history, particularly concerning Black people. In fact, they share strikingly different histories. But its Black citizens share the same challenges. Social justice groups in these nations maintain that these challenges are produced by systemic racism, but that's an extraordinary claim without extraordinary evidence. Now, I would suggest to you that we're getting to the point where even Samuel Say, who is Black, fully Black, even Samuel Say is running up against the border of being able to even question the social justice narrative in social media and in our societies today. The freedom to even question that narrative is disappearing, and it's disappearing quickly. He says, all indications suggest that these nations are not oppressing Black people. Black fathers are. In America, 73% of Black children are born to unmarried Black women, compared to only 29% of white children born to white women. Now, one of the constant, it has been a study in the perversion of rationality to listen to responses that have been provided to myself and to the few others who have joined on the front lines of this particular subject over the weekend. It has been a study in how to twist truth, how to read into things, and basically to just say, you don't have the right to not use our narrative. You must say what we say. And so there are a lot of people that are really good at posting entire tweets or Facebook articles of irrelevant observations. Let's just be honest. This is the essence of our political debate and discussion in our day. I listen to the current Democratic candidates, and when someone actually asks them a serious question, the answer will drive anyone who is trained in logic or rationality or history insane. They know about how long they should talk, about how long their answer should be, about how many words it should have. Whether those words have anything to do with the question, whether they're rational, logical, coherent, or anything. Elizabeth Warren. Oh, my goodness. Oh. Ask her almost any question. And the answer you will get back will never have anything to do with what you actually said. And yet many people go, wow, that was just brilliant. It sounded wonderful. Well, it depends on what you think wonderful sounds like. If words strung together are wonderful to you, great. If you're actually looking for something that demonstrates meaningful worldview analysis, it ain't going to happen. So much of the time, the pushback was not factual. The pushback was not relevant. But the pushback felt good. It was emotionally satisfying. It used words and maybe even sometimes numbers, but didn't have anything to do with the reality. So one of the things that was said all the time, you're just saying black people are more evil than white people. Over and over. You're such a racist. A lot of black women. Facebook, Twitter, you're just a racist. You're disgusting. You're vile. Let's get you blocked. Attack him. The mob formed almost instantly. And it was a mob. It was not a group of thoughtful people. It was a mob. And mobs are not thoughtful. Mobs don't care about truth. Mobs don't care about history. And in this case, mobs don't care anything about the pile of dead black babies in our inner cities. They don't care a thing about that. Oh, they may say they do, but mobs don't care. They can't care. It's the very essence of mob behavior. And oh, they will come after you. You're just saying the white people are better than black people. There is an acknowledged, I'm not just reading Samuel's article. I'll get to another one from the Wall Street Journal. Okay. There are hundreds, nay, thousands of articles available right now to anyone with the temerity to filter through all the garbage, because there's lots of garbage articles too. I mean, that's the internet. But there is so much substantiation of the reality of the existence of this statistical anomaly regarding abortion, fatherlessness, baby mamas, the destruction of the nuclear family, and how there is an anomaly in the black experience in the United States and Canada. It's a reality. It's a fact. And we're actually getting to the point in our society and in the church where you can't say anything about that. If you say anything about that, and it doesn't matter what color you are, you're either a racist or an Oreo. That's the response. It's a mob response. It's an emotional response. It's a slanderous response. But it's the only response the other side has, because the highest priority that has been adopted by these people is the continuation of the narrative. The narrative they have been convinced is absolutely central to the continuation of their community. And therefore, any questioning of the narrative is automatically to be rejected and to be vilified, to be attacked. The mob will get you, as I have now discovered. So I can read a black man saying, in America, 73% of black children are born to unmarried black women compared to only 29% of white children born to white women. And what people hear is not the fact. And instead of sitting back and going, why might that be? What are the factors involved? What are the issues involved? It's you disgusting slime ball of a person. That's sort of kind for some of the things I was called this weekend. You terrible, horrible person. Now, that is not a rational response. That is an irrational response. And if our society gets to the point where everything is irrationality, our society is absolutely doomed. Just start looking for someplace else to move. I don't know where. But this is a fact. You can ignore facts. You can rage at facts. You can get angry at facts. My suggestion to you is that if facts anger you, you are not a mature adult. You're not a mature adult. When we were kids, if our favorite team lost, we'd get angry and we'd throw a fit and you'd get down on the ground and shake your hands and your legs and cry. And there's supposed to be a time when you grow out of that. It's a fact. They lost. Well, this is a fact. Deal with it. There'll be no solutions. And oh, the people, including Christians, where the only solution is government, government, government. Let that huge concentration of sinners handle it. Government. If there's going to be a solution, it's going to deal with mankind as he is. And it's going to come from the gospel. But you have to be able to identify the issues first. When we're dealing with Muslims, I make sure to teach people all around the world what the barriers to the presentation of the gospel are in dealing with Muslims. There are certain barriers that always come up, sometimes a combination, sometimes singly. We need to know what the barriers are to stopping the Holocaust of black babies. We need to know what the barriers are. If we're not even allowed to talk about them, then what you're doing, whether you want to do it or not, is you're promulgating. You're prolonging the destruction of those innocent human babies. That's what you're doing. You may not intend to do it. You may think, maybe all you ever hear is just social justice, critical theory, intersectionality, which has been all over this, including from Christians. The vast majority of the criticism that has come for even daring to address this has assumed the validity of critical theory and intersectionality. If you want to know how deeply that has now infected the church, just look at my Twitter feed. And you might say, well, a number of those people have never read James Cone. That's right, they haven't. But the professors of their pastors did. And so it has filtered down to them. And it has become a part of the way that they think. We're just, guys, we're late to this dance. We are real late to this dance. It's already so much a part of the system that, hey, God can change anything. Christ can subdue any nation. But most of the time he does that through judgment. So, anyway, goodness. Oh, but please, you want, what?
I'm going to try it one more time.
Sure, that's fine. Rich is attempting to do computer surgery on the other side. And I'm glad you told me, because if I was trying to read when you did that, it has blanked out a few times when you've done that. So, as it did just now. So if I was in the middle of a sentence, that would be like, nothing. Let me try it on this side. You had it when? Yeah, well, it's gone? Okay. Well, we tried. All right. Now, let me go back. Sorry. I started to try to write down all the things that I need to get to today, and I realized that just simply wasn't going to happen, and I am going to forget a number of really important things that I wanted to say today. So I can't guarantee really, really, really good organization at all. But anyway. So 73% to 29%. Despite all evidence and logic, social justice groups suggest otherwise. They claim that all disparities, including even disparities between the number of black children raised by single-parent households and the number of white children raised by single-parent households, are the ramifications of past and present systemic racism in America today. If that, however, is true, how then do we explain the nearly identical disparities between black Americans and white Americans to black Canadians and white Canadians? They didn't have a civil war, and they didn't have slavery. They didn't have the antebellum and postbellum South, did they? No. Goes on to say, and though only a rare population of black Canadians are descendant of black Canadian or black American slaves, socioeconomic disparities between black Canadians and black Americans are nearly identical. In America, black men earn 30% less than white men. In Canada, second-generation black men earn 28% less than white men. In America, though black students are only 24% of the students in southern states, they represent 50% of expelled students. In Canada, though black students are only 12% of students in Toronto, they represent 48% of expelled students. In America, though black people are only 13% of the population, they represent 23% of the people killed by police officers, and they represent 33% of prison inmates. In Canada, though black people make up only 9% of the population of Toronto, they make up 70% of the people killed by police officers in the city, and though black Canadians are only 3% of the Canadian population, they represent 9% of the nation's prison inmates. In other words, disparities between black Canadians and white Canadians are identical, and in some specific cases, worse than disparities between black Americans and white Americans. Systemic racism isn't the common denominator in these nations. The glaring common denominator and underlying factor for racial disparities in these nations are the universally high number of black children raised by single mothers in these nations. For instance, in Canada, 46% of black children under 14 years old live in single-parent households, compared to just 18% of other children under 14 years old who live in single-parent households. And in Britain, 59% of Caribbean Britons and 44% of African Britons are raised by single parents, compared to just 22% of white Britons. You seeing something here? These are the facts. And these are the facts that were running through my mind when I saw a discussion of the likelihood of a woman receiving an abortion, and that a black woman was 3.5 times more likely to seek out an abortion than a white woman in the United States. Now, it's going to vary from place to place. Where there are very, very few abortions, the number is going to be different. But you average out over from coast to coast and everything in between. So, I thought about that, and there is an obvious and documented connection between unmarried women who become pregnant and married women who become pregnant. Now, it's horrific to think of the fact that married couples, that a married man will bring his wife to murder their unborn child. But that happens at a much lower rate than an unmarried woman coming to murder the unborn child. So you have legitimate children who are being murdered and illegitimate children. I know we're not supposed to use those terms anymore, but they are necessary and meaningful. So, obviously, therefore, there is a direct connection between the abortion rate and these other issues, especially fatherlessness, baby mamas, and the whole concept of the covenant of marriage. So here is the tweet, and I wish I could put it up, but I'll read it to you very carefully. Here is the tweet that started it all. 7:52 a.m. Isn't that pretty close to the time of the attack on Pearl Harbor? Somewhere. a date which will live in infamy. yeah. Here it is. Quote, which is more likely to be the central cause for the fact that black women are 3.5 times more likely to kill their unborn children? One, fundamentally rebellious sexual ethics, fatherlessness, and sexual license. Two, slavery from 160 years ago. Period. Now, given that I saw this happening within 24 hours and big time, within 36 hours of posting this, I began to see something very, very interesting taking place. And what I saw taking place was the morphing of what I had said into something completely different. At least initially, when people were actually responding to the tweet, there was almost like a need to at least pretend that you're responding to what's there. But once there were a couple of tweet generations, what do you call them? I don't know. We're dealing with new territory here in comparison to the history of the world. Once there were a few steps, then all of a sudden people seem to be willing to start just completely changing what it is I said. I had to keep saying, could you go back, read the original tweet? Can you substantiate what you just said from what I actually wrote? And they couldn't. I can't tell you how many people I challenged over and over again who simply failed en toto to engage in any kind of defense of their criticism of what was said. But let's listen to exactly what was said. Which is more likely to be the central cause? Central cause. That means there can be other factors involved. I purposefully brought up in the following discussion the reality that Planned Parenthood has targeted in a vile, racist, eugenically oriented, disgusting fashion the fact that that organization gets a dime of taxpayer money is blood on the hands of this nation that will bring judgment. And we had 2 years where the Republicans were in charge of both houses and the presidency, and they couldn't even stop it. Planned Parenthood owns too many people. Owns them. And so I brought up, yes, of course, one of the factors involved is the disgusting targeting of the black community by Planned Parenthood. And I don't know why, people, there are not hundreds of black Christians outside of every single stinking abortuary that Planned Parenthood has in a black neighborhood every day calling for it to shut down. Of course that's true. But can you really say that Planned Parenthood is the central cause? Planned Parenthood doesn't force a black man and a black woman who are not married to fornicate with one another. They're not putting a gun to somebody's head. They want to encourage it. They want to encourage it with their sex education and their provision of free, quote-unquote, birth control, which includes abortion these days. And they you bet. But they're not forcing that to happen. That is a man wanting to fulfill his sexual desires without commitment. That's a woman doing the same thing. And Planned Parenthood did not force them to do that. And it is amazing to me how much of this, the term, and I first heard it, Vody Balcom. He used it just a few months ago. I heard him. The soft bigotry of lowered expectations. The soft bigotry of lowered expectations. It was amazing how many people who were calling me the racist actually had at the back of their argumentation the idea that, well, it's, you know, they're blacks. You know, I mean, they've been targeted and they're poor and therefore they just do this type of thing. Really? You don't hear what you're saying? I mean, some of the black women, while calling me a racist, were actually giving clear demonstration that they've bought into the soft bigotry of lowered expectations. And I sat right here when we had Vody Balcom on, and he explained ethnic Gnosticism, and I've seen it every few minutes over this weekend. You can't talk about it until you've lived in the hood. You just don't know till you've been there. Ethnic Gnosticism is everywhere, and it's a part of intersectionality. Critical theory and intersectionality is everywhere now. It's astonishing, including amongst Christians. It's just simply a given amongst non-believers. But it's becoming a given amongst Christians as well. And my friends, critical theory at its root is a fundamental denial of the purposes and intentions of the Creator himself. It is poisonous. It is not a neutral analytical tool, Southern Baptists. It's poisonous at its root. And to see it being imbibed and then employed as a weapon. Wow. So, the question was intended to help people think through what we're hearing these days. Because whether you know it or not, there are people who do specifically make the argument. They specifically make the argument that what we're seeing today, the broken family, and of course our society is trying to completely redefine the family. Have you noticed something? They don't make a lot of progress in the black community. There's good common sense there. It's normally white folks that are doing that kind of silly stuff. But people knowing that they shouldn't be doing what they were doing, do it anyways. Fatherlessness, baby mamas, no commitment in sexual activity. Is that, and people said, well, you're just so insensitive. 280 characters. And people wanted somehow, and this is really just a veiled way of saying you shouldn't talk about this. Just let us deal with this. Well, how's that going? How's critical theory and intersectionality go? How's that working out? Gonna be all fixed soon, right? No. That's really what it was all about. You're just the wrong color, wrong age, don't want to hear from you. Okay. But you should be more sensitive, you see. You should be more sensitive to offending people for whatever reason. Adults are only offended by things that should be offensive, that are based upon a meaningful moral and ethical framework. This perpetual outrage that we experience today is not for mature adults. It's certainly not for Christians. But you should be more sensitive. So you should have a higher priority of offending people's feelings than the deaths of those babies and the destruction of the women's lives that comes with it. Gotcha. That's why I said to a bunch of people, think on what you're saying. Think about what you're saying. Don't just go with the flow. Don't just go with the group. This groupthink is absolutely destructive. So, the central cause for the fact that black women are 3.5% more likely to kill their unborn children. And so when I said fundamentally rebellious sexual ethics, they just automatically said, oh, you're just talking just black women. I'm talking about the community, especially since the next word is fatherlessness. That doesn't have anything to do. I still believe only men can be fathers and only women can be mothers, okay? It was bad enough that this nuclear bomb of a tweet tied together ethnicity and abortion. Oh, let's not bring transgenderism into this or the entire universe will melt down. It's just, it's done. We just can't go there. So I was talking about the community. The community that exists for lots of different reasons. And if you want to trace the origin of the community back to at least having something to do with slavery, I would agree. Because the community had to come together for survival, especially after the emancipation. So I would agree. The community But you see, that happens with any minority. There are always minority communities when you are a minority. But what has happened, and this is where, and this thankfully it did come out, and I hope, I have been contacted by a few people who have expressed their thanks, not only for standing firm, but seeing what's going on here and learning from it. There are, to make the slavery argument, you have to be able to trace direct causation through history. The reality is, at the beginning of the last century, the black family was in good shape. The black family looked like other minority groups in the United States. Chinese, for example, Irish. Similar numbers. The nuclear family had not been destroyed. So if slavery of necessity destroys the nuclear family, it should have destroyed the nuclear family 50 years after it ended, not 150 years after it ended. You have to explain why, if it didn't destroy the nuclear family 50 years afterwards, it started to 90 years afterwards or 100 years afterwards. There's a huge barrier to that argumentation. The second barrier to that argumentation comes from Samuel Say's article. You have the same situation going on in Canada without slavery. So are you literally saying that in the American situation, slavery is the central cause for the fact that black women are 3.5 times more likely to kill their unborn children, though you cannot trace it through the earlier part of the century because it didn't have that effect then here in the United States, and you have to come up with a completely different explanation for Canada because there wasn't any slavery there to be the straight-through cause? That's two barriers. I can't tell you how many people I challenged in that. Not a one of them. Every single one of them just spun off into, yeah, but this over here, and yeah, but that over there. They collapsed. Talking with a woman last night. Went woke last year. Challenged her on that. That was about the level of the response. No response. There is no response. And that was the purpose of the tweet. That was the purpose of the tweet. That was its, to get people to realize what the real issue is. So, in the process, someone was kind enough to link to an article by Jason L. Riley. Now, did I mention that Samuel Say is black? Very black. There is a gorgeous picture of Samuel on the internet wearing a really nice Coogee sweater. It just goes so spot on. You weren't. just killed Rich in another room. Hopefully the Rich Cam didn't catch that. Anyway, everybody knows Samuel's black. Jason L. Riley, guess what? He's black too. Not as black as Samuel, but in that category. Let's talk about the black abortion rate. In New York City, thousands more black babies are aborted each year than born alive. July 10th, 2018. So less than a year ago. But before my tweet, Jason L. Riley, I don't know his spiritual background. I don't get any feeling that he is a Christian. I could be wrong. I don't know. But he says some very, very interesting things. Social scientists, there's no theological aspect. That's why I don't know. Social scientists aren't sure why black attitudes toward abortion have changed. One theory is that as more blacks migrate out of the conservative deep south and settled in other regions of the country with more liberal views on reproductive rights, their attitudes changed accordingly. Another possibility is that people with higher incomes and more education tend to be pro-choice And listen to this, folks. And since the early 1970s, the socioeconomic status of blacks has increased dramatically. Dramatically. At the very same time that the socioeconomic status of blacks has increased dramatically, you have a change in their view of abortion toward abortions of convenience. Because remember, folks, even if you use the maximum numbers of real danger to the life of the mother, documentable birth defects, and rape and incest, you put all them together, 95% of all abortions are abortions of convenience. They are elective. They are a form of birth control. They are, I don't want this baby, but I had unprotected sex, and so I'm going to kill it. That's what they are, 95%. And there is many a black woman who drove herself to a Planned Parenthood facility on this day in a late model car, who is middle class, owns their own home, has health insurance, and killed their baby out of convenience. That happened today. The vast majority of the times that happened today, it was simply out of convenience. What's not in doubt, he continues, is the outsized toll that abortion has taken on the black population post-Roe. In New York City, thousands more black babies are aborted than born alive each year. And the abortion rate among black mothers is more than three times higher than it is for white mothers. I think that's what my tweet was based on. This is a year earlier, black author, Wall Street Journal. According to a, that must mean this man is a vile racist, because I was called a vile racist for mentioning that, so he must be a vile racist too. According to a city health department report released in May, between 2012 and 2016, black mothers terminated 136,426 pregnancies and gave birth to 118,127 babies. By contrast, births far surpassed abortions among whites, Asians, and Hispanics. So if you were conceived by any man and a black woman in New York City in that time period, you had less than a 50-50 chance of surviving your mother's womb. That's New York City. Nationally, black women terminate pregnancies at far higher rates than other women as well. In 2014, 36% of all abortions were performed on black women, who are just 13% of the female population. The little discussed flip side of reproductive freedom is that abortion deaths far exceed those via cancer, violent crime, heart disease, AIDS, and accidents. Racism, poverty, and lack of access to health care are the typical explanations for these disparities, but black women have much higher abortion rates even after you control for income. Moreover, other low-income ethnic minorities who experience discrimination, such as Hispanics, abort at rates much closer to white women than black women. The more plausible explanation may have to do with marriage. Oh, by the way, I was given this when I by one of the groups at Apologia Church. When I became an elder, if you're not familiar with what this is the Picard facepalm. It came from a particular episode of Star Trek: The Next Generation, and Picard is putting his hand in his palm because of the absurdity of what's going on. I wished I had had this at home. It probably would have been worn out by everything that I was experiencing. But here's a facepalm. I may have to use it more times in the future. Yeah, that's what Samuel said. That's what I said. Here it's in the Wall Street Journal a year earlier. Where was the mob then? Where were you, Twitter mob? The more plausible explanation may have to do with marriage. Unmarried women are more likely to experience an unintended pregnancy, and Black women are less likely than their white, Asian, and Hispanic counterparts to marry. That wasn't the case at the beginning of the century. What changed? It wasn't slavery. Hence, the entire point of my tweet has been established beyond any controversy. The debate's over. It's true that many of these would-be partners are sitting in prison, but it's also true that this racial divide in marriage, which started in the 1960s and has grown ever since, what happened then, predates the mass incarceration of Black men that took off in the 1980s. Started before then. Among civil rights activists today, talk of Black self-destructive behavior is unpopular and minimal. Writing in Commentary magazine last month, Jason Hill, a professor of philosophy at DePaul University, noted the hypocrisy of groups like Black Lives Matter, who want white people to esteem Black lives and value the humanity of Black people, when they themselves can't condemn and express moral outrage at those who maim and kill Black children in the course of gang warfare, senseless street violence, and drive-by shootings. Mr. Hill added that the moral hysteria raised by a few incidents of police brutality in the face of this larger national tragedy is reckless hyperbole and hides from the nation a deep malaise at work in the psyche of some in the Black community, a form of self-hatred that manifests itself in a homicidal rage, not fundamentally against white people, but against other Black people. When you combine the amount of Black violent behavior directed at other Blacks with the number of pregnancies terminated by Black women, the rate at which Blacks willingly end the lives of one another is chilling and far surpasses what goes on within other racial and ethnic groups. Racial disparities in abortion rates are no less disturbing than racial disparities in income, crime, poverty, and school suspensions. Why are the people who want to lecture the rest of us about the value of Black lives pretending otherwise? Amen. As Christians, we are supposed to look at these facts from a Christian worldview, not through critical theory, intersectionality, and some sort of cultural Marxism that's been run through the filters of Derrida and Foucault. And once you buy into that stuff, you will no longer have a distinctly, meaningfully Christian response to offer to these issues. So what was my great sin in pointing that reality out? That truly is the question. So, we had, for example, contrarian Lolly down in South Africa. See, we export our foolishness to the rest of the world. And South Africa is a nation in turmoil. It's a nation in turmoil. There are people fleeing South Africa. And then there are others attempting to remain faithful and to minister there. Please pray for South Africa. The dynamics there are different than the United States. And so to export the already perverted, unbiblical Marxist ideas that are being applied here into that context are absolutely destructive, not only to the society, but to the church. And so contrarian Lolly said, "This man is an accomplished racist. What a reprehensible thing to say. God help me not find out if he intends visiting South Africa again." And then she tried to go after various of the churches that I have ministered in South Africa. And what was that in response to? The tweet that we just demonstrated was absolutely 1,000% consistent with what has been stated and documented by black writers for years. But you can't say it anymore. Not allowed to. Number of people called Christians. Jasmine D. Wilson. I'm a Christian. Yes, the thing is, I do not believe you are one. I'm not someone who is unfamiliar with you or your teaching. Like many, I had followed you for years, respected you, championed you. James, you are not convincing anyone that you care for black babies. Not only does nobody believe you, it simply isn't true, and you continue to show it with the racism you spew about black people. Your gaslighting doesn't change that. I'm not devalued, no matter how much you would like to devalue me. I saw your racist treat, etc., 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 etc. Racist treat. So once again, how do you come up with a racism from a factual, logical, documented, from multiple sources demonstration that the core issue in causing black women to have a higher rate of seeking abortion is not because of American slavery? How is that racist? Well, once again, we live in a day where words no longer have meaning. Wells was right. He who controls language controls the society and history. There once was a general consensus and understanding of what racism was and is. And it has been rightly condemned in our society. But now, because of critical theory and intersectionality, racism requires power. And so now we're dealing with an entire generation of people, and not just black. This woman from the picture anyways isn't black. She's white. But we have an entire generation of people who've been taught that blacks cannot be racists. I experienced a tremendous amount of black racism this weekend. Tremendous amount of it. And I did not see anyone rebuking black racism on Twitter. It was applauded, accepted, expected. It was encouraged. And on a biblical definition of racism, an animus in one's heart toward another individual that violates their status as an image bearer of God, that is dishonest about them and is prejudicial toward them, does not seek justice for them. And again, biblical justice. That was happening all the time by black people. And they were never called to repent. Because we live in a day where it has now been concluded they can't be racist, which means there is no meaningful way to define sin any longer. We now have different standards for what sin is for one skin color than another skin color, one community than another community. That's what we're facing. There's a tremendous amount of black racism. In fact, let me give you, because I don't need to go forever on this, but let me give you some real black racism. Because in the midst of all this, what was it, 2000? Would had to have been 2007 I did my first James Cone show. Because it was before Barack Obama's election. It was during the campaign. So it was 2007 or 2008. I think it was probably early 2008. Yeah, it was during the primaries. So it was early 2008. I did my first show where I simply purchased two of James Cone's books and read them. Oh, wait, marked in Kindle the quotations and read them out. Then, what, last year? I did it again. I think when he died. So last year, when he died, Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary had some podcasts talking about him. And I went back through and I read whole sections of James Cohen. That's all you have to do. Well, in the midst of all this, and I'm sorry, I can't remember who it was. It was a Thad or a Chad. I'm sorry if I don't remember. Someone posted a graphic, a picture from a paper book. And I really struggled to read it. It was very hard for me to read. The print was very small. Couldn't blow the graphic up properly on the screen. But I read it and I was blown away. And so they did mention what book it was from, which I did not have. So I bought it. By the way, if you buy this book, God of the Oppressed, and if you buy the Kindle version, it is horribly done. Someone just did not care and just threw a PDF in there, and there's errors all over the place and font differences. It was not edited. No one, but that's what I had to do. Anyway, and so since I had the picture version, and now I had the electronic version, but it wouldn't let me copy from it, at least I was able to type out the section from the book that someone had posted. This is not from somewhere in the middle of the book. This is the conclusion of the book. So this is his final statement. Now, why am I reading this? It's real simple, folks. I mentioned this briefly before. What explains the black racism that we've seen? What explains the fact that Christians can so quickly embrace critical theory and intersectionality and start thinking this way, which is so opposed to the apostolic message and is so divisive and is so destructive? How is this happening? They're not running around reading James Cone. So how are they imbibing this? Because it has been the very milk of what has been taught in liberal leftist seminaries, and now it's coming into our seminaries too. And so as it moves out into the ministers, white and black, then it becomes a part of the narrative. It becomes a part of the sermons. It becomes a part of the interpretation of the text itself. And so it's absorbed over time. They don't have to read Cone. Cone's racism is still alive and well, mediated through that mechanism. So let me read what was posted. Like I said, I bought the book, double-checked it. This is the conclusion of the book, The God of the Oppressed. When whites undergo the true experience of conversion, wherein they die to whiteness and are reborn anew in order to struggle against white oppression and for the liberation of the oppressed, there is a place for them in the black struggle of freedom. Here, reconciliation becomes God's gift of blackness through the oppressed of the land. But it must be made absolutely clear that it is the black community that decides both the authenticity of white conversion and also the part these converts will play in the black struggle of freedom. The converts can have nothing to say about the validity of their conversion experience or what is best for the community or their place in it, except as permitted by the oppressed community itself. As is true of every member of the black community, accountability remains an essential ingredient of all who share in the struggle of freedom. But white converts, if there are any to be found, must be made to realize that they're like babies who have barely learned how to walk and talk. Thus, they must be told when to speak and what to say. Otherwise, they will be excluded from our struggle. What is always ruled out is white converts using their experience in our community as evidence against blacks, claiming that reconciliation with whites is possible. Unless whites can get every single black person to agree that reconciliation is realized? There is no place whatsoever for white rhetoric about the reconciling love of blacks and whites. For if whites are truly converted to our struggle, they know that reconciliation is a gift that excludes boasting. It is God's gift of blackness, made possible through the presence of the divine in the social context of black existence. With the gift comes a radical change in lifestyle, wherein one's value system is now defined by the oppressed engaged in the liberation struggle. Black people must be aware of the extreme dangers of speaking too lightly of reconciliation with whites. Just because we work with them and sometimes worship alongside them should be no reason to claim that they are truly Christians and thus a part of our struggle. Every mistake we make regarding white integrity will lead to the further entrenchment of our oppression by white people. End quote. Dr. James Cone, The God of the Oppressed, page 222, if you want to look it up. Now, most people, when they hear that, are just, they don't even have a category to put it in. They don't have a category to put it in. But do you remember when Donald Trump was elected president, November of 2016? That was Tuesday. So Wednesday, Thursday of that next week, I'm pretty certain it was Jamar Tisby who had a discussion online about what? Do you remember? Our memories are short. About how he was afraid to worship with white people on the coming Sunday. Just because we work with them and sometimes worship alongside them should be no reason to claim that they are truly Christians and thus a part of our struggle. Now, do I really need to lay out the fact that James Cone was not a Christian? That from any historical, creedal standpoint, James Cone makes the Jehovah's Witnesses, Mormons, and Muslims together look orthodox? That he defines Christianity as the struggle against oppression? That the gift of God and reconciliation is blackness? This is heresy in its fullest form. And yet, in our seminaries, you have James Cone being studied, not as an example of what our theology should be, but for what we can learn from him. Folks, if you can't find enough orthodox black writers to learn from that you got to use James Cone, you have not done your research. I can see reading James Cone in seminary. I read a lot of heresy in seminary. I really did. But I knew it was heresy. And I treated it as heresy. And I wasn't looking for insights from it. You need to understand that oppression and the oppressed, that is the definitional essence of critical theory, which was identified as an appropriate tool of analysis by Resolution 9 at the Southern Baptist Convention. What can I say? What can I say? Isn't it obvious? You say, that's just so extreme. Yes, it is extreme. But that explains all the garbage from Jasmine Wilson. That explains why Keisha Atkinson on Facebook wrote, "He's just gross." This is in regard, just as a tweet. "Had zero business posting this. Thankfully, he is canceled. Him and his whole crew. Totally obsessed with black people and hardly building us up. And tell me how this isn't racist. Bye." The comments on that particular Facebook post were, well, the only term is vile. Profane, profanity. These are supposed to be Christians. Well, not all of them, I guess, obviously. She later posted slander, utterly fallacious lies about me. And what would motivate something like this? You think there might be a connection through teachers and preachers over time from James Cone down to Keisha Atkinson? Because I doubt she's read him. Maybe she has. I don't know. Maybe she thinks that's great stuff. I don't know. But in all probability, it's a mediated thing. And what that allows then is when you read James Cone, you are given an intellectual foundation for being a black racist against whites. I don't know how you could read Cone and not come away with an absolute attitude of despising whites, because it's plain that he did. This is what we have to deal with in the church today. There was a fellow by the name of Christian Moscoso. And he identified me as his brother, thankfully. He says, "I have no problem understanding the centrality of sin in the abortion debate. My concern is with your tone and your disregard for fellow believers and the way you engage the debate. You don't owe me an explanation. All I'm doing as your brother is asking you to consider whether the way you write and engage in debate reflects the love of Christ." I appreciate that at least he didn't automatically kick me out of the kingdom. But here's my response, and I thank you for that, and reply by asking you if you have considered whether the way the apostles Paul or Peter wrote reflected the love of Christ. This will immediately demonstrate that modern sensitivity to offense was not a part of the apostolic concern. May I suggest, brother, that when the love of Christ confronts a pile of dead babies, its first thought is not whether those responsible and involved will be offended? I hope somebody read that and heard that. I had a graphic I was going to show you. It's that, I don't know, it's some superhero where you've got two buttons to push and he's mopping his brow because they're supposed to be, you can't figure out the one or the other. And it was James White, "I do not embrace a worldview that divides on the basis of ethnic community. James White, black women are 3.5 times more likely to kill their unborn children, da 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 da," as if this is a contradiction. Again, like I said, that this came up like 5 or 6 times. I think people were passing around the idea, hey, you hit him with this and I'll hit him with that. And even though the first time around, I demonstrated just how utterly inane, and inane is not a compliment, the argument was, that saying that the Christian anthropology of man does not divide man up into ethnic categories in that way has nothing to do with the fact that the government provides statistics in that way. And every one of you that thought that was just a killer argument, I'm sorry. I can't even begin to have respect for your argumentation skills because they are non-existent. Utterly non-existent. I'm just looking at stuff here. So one of the things I mentioned, there are a lot of people subtweeting this, and I only learned, are you familiar with that terminology? Okay. I only learned it a few weeks ago. There's lots of stuff I'm just only learning. Oh. There are a lot of people subtweeting this. David Kwan subtweeted it. There were a lot of national leaders heard, you know, it went viral. And that's why we needed to take this program and spend an hour and a half unpacking it, and providing rather full documentation and laying it all out there. Because there's a lot of people who just, I don't know what's going on. I don't know. So a guy named Esau McCauley said there's a lot of people outside our community tweeting about what we need to do to solve our problems that don't really love us and don't deserve our energy at all. Well, it's a sad thing when people, and he's wearing a clerical collar, make it very, very clear that despite what's going on in the community, we'll take care of ourselves. Thank you very much. So where is that person's identity in that community? Not in the community of Christ, not in the church, but in an ethnic community. That's the primary, that's intersectionality. That's the whole nine yards. That's the way it's supposed to be. And Christy Anyabwili, I believe that is Thabiti's daughter. Facts. You're right. Agreed with that fellow. And then I mentioned specifically Dr. Solution L. Joseph, PhD, who follows me, wrote to Samuel Say and said, "Brother Samuel, who has taught you to hate yourself and demonize your own people, black people who are God's image bearers? Why are you always trying to defend racists and people who see no human dignity in black people? I have been following you for too long to make this conclusion." That was in response to his article. That indicates a thickness of lens, of filter upon this man's eyes and mind that is beyond my ability to break through. If you can read that article and think that in any way, shape, or form, Samuel Say was hating himself or demonizing, well, see, that's just it. He wasn't demonizing his own people. He recognizes his own people are the redeemed of every tribe, tongue, people, and nation. So there is a difference there. He was not demonizing black people who are God's image bearers. And he doesn't, and of course, always trying to defend racists. So that term, when it's thrown around without any reference to a biblical foundation by Christian people, is sinful. It is sin to identify people as racists who are not acting as racists. And I identified black people as racists on this program. And then I read their words where they're acting in a racist fashion, demonstrating animus based on race, whole nine yards, all the proper categories. But when you just throw it out as a trite attack upon people who disagree with you, not only is it grossly disrespectful, it's sinful if you claim to be a Christian. That's all there is to it. So, it was not my intention in any way, shape, or form to have a tweet go viral this weekend in the way that it did. But I'm glad that it did. In many ways, and I don't enjoy being slandered and you're canceled and it's, you know, fine, whatever, you know. But at the same time, this is going to happen more and more often to anyone who speaks the truth in this society and in this church in general. Obviously, I recognize that there is a distinction between the external church and the true church. We can't always tell in this life, but that's not a discussion for here at the end of the program. What I am saying is the temptation that I experienced a number of times this weekend was to either just bail on social media, because it really... No one, even me, no one enjoys being constantly lied about and slandered and people twisting your words purposefully. And sometimes it's out of abject ignorance, but most of the time it's purposeful. No one enjoys that. And that's why nobody will talk about these things, because everybody knows it's exactly what's going to happen. And if it happens about this now, then next week it's going to be something else and something else and something else, and it could get more and more and more mundane all the way down the road until you can't say anything from a Christian worldview. You just can't do it. And so I thought, if I back down, you know, because so many people say, well, you know, don't you just think there's another way to address it? How has the politically correct approach been working? How many babies died today because of the politically correct approach? How many will die tomorrow? What's the acceptable number? All because we don't want to offend anyone. What is it? Have you thought it through? That's what I want to know. No one can answer that question. No one even wants to touch it. There is a vast difference between simply seeking to offend people for the sake of offense and taking the time, as I did, to make a comment that was meant to cause people to think about history and theology and morality all at once, about something that's really important. Huge difference. And yet I met a lot of Christians, and some of you are well-meaning, that can't see the difference. You have been cowered by the world. I didn't say you are a coward. You have been cowered. That's a verb. You have been cowered by the world. You don't want the world to be offended at what you have to say. The world will always be offended at what you have to say, because the message of the cross is to them that are perishing the very stench of death. It's foolishness and always will be. Right now, you might think that by selectively choosing what aspects of the gospel you apply to the society around you, you might get away with still maintaining some friendship with the world. Those doors will be closed before you know it. And if you are coward now, C-O-W-E-R-E-D, if you are cowering in front of the world, because I don't want to offend anybody, eventually you will realize that all of your opportunities to have spoken anything that will have eternal value and meaning are gone. They're gone. That means we will have to stick together. We will have to support one another. Because this isn't going to go away. This isn't going to go away. Would I have rather done a Bible study today, done something about Islam, and had to deal with the issue? Hopefully did so clearly. Hopefully did so in such a fashion as to encourage others to think biblically to the glory of Jesus Christ, who is King of Kings and Lord of Lords. Thanks for listening to the program. We'll see you on Thursday. God bless.